The rumor mill is spinning today in Washington that the special counsel Robert Mueller is about to submit his report on possible Trump campaign collusion with Russians. Here's the president this morning.
We'll see what happens. There was no collusion. There was no obstruction. Everybody knows it. It's all a big hoax.
Let's start there with our Friday Politics Roundtable. Kelsey Snell, NPR congressional reporter, is with us. Hi, Kelsey.
Hey there.
And Sahil Kapoor, a Bloomberg News national political reporter. Welcome.
Great to join you.
So let's start there with the Mueller report. And I admit that in a couple hours, we could be wrong, but we have been here before where people think that it's about to come out. But on the Fox Business Network this morning, Trump was asked what he's expecting. Here he is.
Well, it's always interesting to me because a deputy that didn't get any votes appoints a man that didn't get any votes. He's going to write a report on me.
Kelsey, what if this report does not implicate the president or anyone in his circle on collusion? Is it going to be a letdown for those who are waiting for some big blockbuster?
Well, I think it's going to cause Democrats, particularly in the House, to kind of rethink the way that they're framing the investigations that they're doing, both in the Judiciary Committee and the House Oversight Committee and in a number of other committees, like the Ways and Means Committee that's looking into his tax returns. They're kind of relying on the Mueller report to give them a little bit more fuel to kind of lend some public legitimacy to an investigation that many of them are afraid could be viewed as partisan. So if the Mueller report does come back and shows that there is no provable wrongdoing by the president or by his staff, that just makes that much more difficult. And Democrats may have to reassess how they approach things.
Sahil, what are you expecting when it comes to the Mueller report?
Well, the two things that everyone's going to be looking out for is that does Robert Mueller have evidence that the president was involved in a conspiracy to commit a crime, in other words, coordinate with Russia to influence and manipulate the 2016 election, and did he commit obstruction of justice? Now, some other things that Democrats in Congress are going to be looking for is evidence that the president was somehow compromised, and that could mean that the Russians had information on him or even they knew that he was lying about something that, if the Russians were to reveal, would be damaging to him politically. So there are a number of different tentacles to this that Democrats are going to be looking for. But I do think Kelsey's absolutely right that this is going to be a tipping point in the way Democrats handle this. One way or another, there is a flashpoint on Capitol Hill. There's a debate among Democrats as to how speedily, how rapidly, and how quickly to pursue the president's tax returns, because that is going to be the next stage of this investigation in terms of his finances and what other things he was involved in.
Okay, we'll have a chance to talk a lot more about it once we see it, if we see it. But how about this next story? We remember that President Trump, during his campaign, made a very big deal of Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server. Now we're hearing from a House committee chairman that President Trump's daughter, Ivanka, has been using a private email account, and that her husband, Jared Kushner, has been using WhatsApp encrypted messages to communicate with foreign leaders while they've both been conducting official business at the White House. Kelsey, Chairman Elijah Cummings also is saying that the White House is stonewalling the committee's request for documents from Trump insiders on all sorts of different investigations. So talk about that. Is it legal, and what happens next with all those investigations?
Well, the response from the White House has actually been more or less what we have expected. They have given every signal that while they publicly say that they're interested in complying. This is really in line with the way the White House has approached all investigations, is to question whether or not it is their responsibility to turn over documents. I don't think we should expect that Elijah Cummings will stop asking for them or that the committee will stop attempting to use whatever powers, including potentially their subpoena power, to go after information. This is not an end point. This is just the beginning of what many, many Democrats tell me could be an investigation that stretches on for years. When it comes to the question of Jared Kushner and the use of WhatsApp and the emails, his attorney, we should be clear, has said that the way that the Democrats have conveyed this is maybe misconstruing things. And I think we'll see more information on this come out over the next days and weeks.
The lawyer has, in fact, said, Kushner's lawyer has said, he did not use WhatsApp to communicate with leaders. Elijah Cummings says he did. So, again, perhaps we'll figure that out eventually.
Right. I think that is something that dispute is probably going to go on. And that actually, it goes to the point that we were making about earlier about the political side of this, is that when there are these disputes about the facts like that, it makes it more difficult for either side to claim that this is a completely nonpartisan or a kind of investigation that goes beyond politics.
Let's talk about what's going on with the late Senator John McCain. President Trump once again this morning said he's not a fan of McCain. Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business News pressed Trump on all of the comments and tweets that he's made about McCain this morning.
We would have had great health care.
But, Mr. President, he's dead. He can't punch back. I know you punch back,
no,
but he's dead.
I don't talk about it. People ask me the question. I didn't bring this up. You just brought it up.
Now, there are a handful of Republicans who have pushed back against the president. Senator Isaacson from Georgia, Senator Joni Ernst said she didn't appreciate the tweets, that John McCain is a dear friend of hers and President Trump should stop doing what he's doing. But Sahil, explain why is this happening? Why is President Trump doing this? Who is he talking to?
The president has continued to attack John McCain in spite of what members of his party have said, in spite of the discomfort that he's seen among many Republicans. But look, this falls under the long category of things that President Trump can say or do that'll cause discomfort among Republicans, whether it's his allies on Capitol Hill or his voters around the country, but that won't cause them to abandon him. And he knows that, which is why he keeps doing it over and over again. Now, the backstory to this, of course, is that the two things the president has been going after McCain on was the fact that he received the dossier, the so-called Steele dossier or information about that early on in 2017 and passed it along to the FBI. McCain has confirmed that he did do that. And the president keeps going after John McCain for that famous thumbs down on the Senate floor that killed the Obamacare repeal effort. There's not a whole lot of love for John McCain among President Trump's core base of support, which is another reason he feels free to keep going after him.
But at the same time, Kelsey, there's a question of decency and going after not just somebody who has passed away, but also a war hero who's revered by both Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, and I think that is a huge frustration for a lot of Republicans. I mean, this is the kind of thing where we talked to them about this before. This isn't the first time the president has gone after John McCain. And they will talk to us in the hallways, and Sahil has probably seen this happen as well, where they will say that it's really hard for them to be in this situation because they want the president to just stop distracting from policies, and they want him to understand that John McCain was a personal friend and somebody that they cared about very deeply. And so this is a very personal situation, and one that really, really angers Republicans, establishment Republicans, and a lot of Republican voters who feel very strongly about that McCain was a presidential candidate who many of them voted for and who they supported. And this creates a tension within the party that a lot of Republicans feel is completely unnecessary.
The president was also turning some heads this week when he tweeted that the United States should recognize Israel's control of the Golan Heights, which it's had for decades. This is just days ahead of a visit by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who's facing a very tough re-election battle back at home. Netanyahu called this a miracle announcement from Trump, but let's listen to some more of that interview with Fox host Maria Bartiromo, who asked about it this morning.
This is about regional security.
It's not about Netanyahu's re-election.
No, I don't. I wouldn't even know about that. I wouldn't even know about that. I have no idea. I hear he's doing okay.
Sahil, what do you make of that? Do you agree with the president has no idea about that? And why did he do it if it wasn't to help Netanyahu?
Well, it would be a rather happy convenience for Netanyahu if the president just so happened to do this while Netanyahu is facing a very difficult re-election that's coming right up. This is something that Netanyahu has wanted. Israel, of course, seized the Golan Heights in the 1967 war and later went on to annex it. It is disputed territory, to say the least. International law does not recognize Israel's sovereignty over it. So it's quite an extraordinary step for a United States president to say that, this should be recognized as Israel's territory. This has, of course, sparked a debate that has been ongoing already inside the Democratic Party, elevated, I should say, a debate that's been ongoing inside the Democratic Party about U.S. policy toward Israel, whether America should maintain its steadfast level of support for the Jewish state if it continues policies such as moving seizing on Jerusalem and continuing its expansion of settlements and things like that. There are many progressives that are highly uncomfortable with that, and that has led several Democratic presidential candidates to snub the AIPAC convention, pro-Israel lobby.
Right, next week that convention's happening.
Well, actually, Sahil, thank you for bringing us to the Democratic presidential candidates, because in the minute we have left, I want to talk about something else that's in the news. Kelsey, former Vice President Joe Biden has not announced a candidacy yet, but people expect him to do that. And there is word that if he does, that he may pledge to only seek one term. To deal with concerns about his age, and that he may even choose a running mate right at the start, possibly former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams. What about that?
Well, I'm hearing from Democrats who say that, you know, that they question some of those choices. Choosing to say that you will only be around for a year could create a situation where Congress doesn't take the president all that seriously if Biden were to be elected.
For a term, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, for one term. I'm sorry. Because, you know, it's essentially creating a lame duck right from the get-go. And there are also a lot of questions about choosing a running mate right away because nobody knows who's going to be popular by the time the election rolls around.
Well, we will see, and we will keep following not just what's happening in the White House, but also those people who would like to be in the White House in a couple of years. Sahil Kapoor at Bloomberg News and Kelsey Snell, NPR congressional reporter, thanks to both of you.
Thanks so much
for
having me.